This is A's Cast Live, your comprehensive look at the Oakland Athletics.
Watch the left field deep. Bam going back, looking up. He will watch it fly.
And 29 other MLB clubs.
2-2 pitch on Trout, and he blasts one.
Way back. Goal for Yelich.
Cody Bellinger hits one out.
Pete Alonso, he's your home run derby champion.
Join us as we take you inside the baseball universe. From spin rate to juiced balls to game-changing moments, we have you covered. Spend your afternoon with us next from the town, only on A's Cast Live. A's Cast Live. Here's Chris Townsend.
I know everybody's now excited. Commander Cody, you're excited. Matt Olson's going to be in the home run derby. Are you excited about Coors Field and the home run derby? How are you, Cody?
I'm great. Matt Olson, one career home run at Coors Field, so hopefully he hits more than one home run in the home run derby, which I think he will. It's going to be a good showcase for a lot of people because, you know, that was one of the quotes I saw from Steve Berman's article from The Athletic about how just a lot of people don't watch West Coast baseball, which I have to disagree because how many All-Stars did the Giants have? How many All-Stars did the Dodgers have? The Angels had technically four All-Stars because Ohtani made it twice, and they had Jared Walsh. They had three All-Stars. The Padres had four All-Stars. And I mean, come on. So people are watching West Coast baseball.
That's kind of a weak old argument, you know, the whole – and trust me, if you cover baseball, you stay up late. You ask all these guys, they'll stay up late. They have to get up in the morning. They watch the highlight shows. They know who's good. You don't think they know – you really know about Fernando Tatis Jr.? Come on. You don't think they know what's going on in L.A.? They know. I mean, it's the same thing. You know, think about us. We don't really watch East Coast games. I'm not sitting around at 4 o'clock watching. We have a show going on. So it kind of works both ways if you think about it. Because let's just say the West Coast audience, most people at 4 o'clock are still at work.
Yeah.
And then they're driving home, and you're not getting home till 6, 6:30. So – The whole argument of the East Coast, they just don't pay attention. I don't necessarily buy that. We've had far too many Heisman Trophy winners come out of the West Coast. You know what I mean? Don't tell me that when a football team is doing well, like back in the day, the 49ers with Joe Montana, people on the East Coast were watching.
Yeah,
you know
good.
What's going on. If Tom Brady was playing for the Seattle Seahawks, everybody would be watching the Seattle Seahawks. So I don't necessarily buy that argument. And Is it a great showcase? I mean, now that Matt Olson's in it, but to be honest with you, I think what was the year at Yankee Stadium where Josh Hamilton set the record? Did not win, but he set the record for most home runs in a round.
I think that was 2000. I'm looking it up right now. That would have been, I want to say 2000. I would say 2008. So that was
that's the last home run derby I've watched.
Yeah. So this year,
I don't watch home run derby.
This year, the home run derby is at Coors Field, as we know. The last A to participate in the home run derby was Matt Chapman, if we remember, at Progressive Field in 2019.
Don't remember. Yeah. If you would have asked me who's the last one, I would have said Yoenis Cespedes.
He's the last one to win back-to-back years. The A's have had three. Two guys win the derby three times. McGuire, remember, won it once. So Olson's looking to maybe the third player to win the home run derby is an Oakland Athletic. Olson's the second left-handed hitter from the A's to participate in a home run derby, if my research is correct. Can you guess who the other guy was that was left-handed?
Left-hander in the home run derby. I guess you'd have to go back to Giambi, right?
There you go. It was Giambi in 2001. Do you know John Jaha?
Nobody cares.
Did you know John Jaha was in the home run derby?
No, as an A?
Yeah, 1999.
John Jaha.
Yeah, he was in there. But anyway, here's what we have in the home run derby so far this year. The Polar Bear, the defending champion, who's not an all-star in the home run derby. Trevor Story, not in the all-star game, but the hometown guy in the home run derby. Salvador Perez, who is an all-star in the home run derby. Trey Mancini, not in the all-star game, but taking place in the home run derby. Shohei Ohtani, who's an all-star both ways, and now Matt Olson. So there's two more guys still needed to be picked for the home run derby that we're looking for next Monday night.
They ruined the event. It used to be a cool event. If you remember back, they'd have 10 guys, everybody, I think it was 10 or 8 guys. and you'd get up, you'd have one round, you got 10 outs, and then when you had 10 outs, you were done. And everybody hit once, and when it was over, you know, we all went bye-bye. And it was in the day, too. It wasn't even at night, if you remember back. Everybody would take BP, guys would talk to the media, and then they would roll out Home Run Derby, and then it'd be over. It wasn't even dark out. But for some reason, you know, obviously ESPN's made the big investment, and they want to try and capitalize as much as they can. They want to have the ratings because there's nothing going on in sports. Well, that's different this year because the NBA Finals will be going on, right?
Yeah, and we're in game five of the Stanley Cup, so that might be done. The NBA Finals starts tonight, game one. Suns, Bucks.
And we know how the NBA Finals works. You play one game, then you take a week off, and then you play two games, and you take 3 weeks off. I mean, the NBA Finals. You want to talk about not having any rhythm to it whatsoever, because it's not like, you know, normal playoffs, because they do this ridiculous stuff with television. I mean, you can have 2 days off before you see another game. So we haven't had a good rhythm to the NBA Finals. I mean, it was bizarre covering the Warriors in the finals.
Here's how it works. You got some people probably excited to see the Suns and Bucks.
No, excited to see the Suns.
I mean, well, they haven't been there since 1993, but
is Charles Barkley still on the team?
I mean, there's nobody playing on either team that has any championship experience. Like, nobody has a ring. Only Jay Crowder played in the NBA Finals. It was last year, but
The executives in New York are like, oh my God, we've got the Bucks against the Suns. How much you want to bet this will be the lowest rated NBA Finals in years?
Oh, probably.
In years. First of all, you're in July where we're not used to watching basketball at this point. And you got the Bucks and the Suns.
The only saving thing is you wait.
These finals are going to be horrifically bad.
The only thing that saves you is you got Giannis Antetokounmpo, but he's hurt. He might not even play. He might not even play tonight or game two.
You literally could walk down the street and ask people if they know who this guy is, and they don't.
So game one tonight, game two Thursday, game three Sunday, game four Wednesday. So it won't conflict with the All-Star break. Game five Saturday. So you go. It goes tonight, Thursday, Sunday, Wednesday, Saturday. So there are days in between.
How do you even get into that?
They were taking.
As a fan, how do you get into a series when there's so many days off?
Look at it last year. They were taking multiple days off when they're playing in a bubble in Orlando. They didn't even have to travel.
And by the way, it was a modern day worse ratings. You had LeBron James. You had the Lakers in the NBA Finals, and it was a modern-day low. If LeBron James and the Lakers can't get ratings, what do you think the Bucks Suns is going to be?
Yeah, well.
Nobody's watching the NBA. I'm telling you, everything is down. So many things are down. The Oscars, the Golden Globes, the Super Bowl. The Super Bowl, I don't think, had ever gone down in my lifetime. And this was the lowest rated Super Bowl this past Super Bowl since what, like 2006 or something like that? This NBA Finals is going to be horrific. Well, sorry, Italian Stallion, Joey Lavatore, who got his Suns in the finals. I don't think that's going to be must-watch TV. Well, I would even put maybe the Home Run Derby up against it.
I don't want to be a bearer of bad news, but I just saw this on Twitter, and we do have breaking news, and it has to do with the A's and the bullpen. So I'm going to play the sounder because this is going to be this is breaking.
Live from the ABC Sports Desk in New York, I'm Chris Townsend.
According to Matt Kawahara on Twitter, this is from Bob.
Do I even want to hear this?
We have to do it. This is what we do. According to Bob Melvin, Trevor Rosenthal is going to have hip surgery, and his quote is, "We will not see him this year."
Hip surgery.
Yeah, so Trevor Rosenthal, we will not see him in an A's uniform this year.
Hip, what? He had that thoracic
outlet syndrome. That's in your shoulder, so now he's having hip surgery?
$11 million, and you won't make one pitch for the Oakland A's. Just wrap your head around that one. You're going to get paid $11 million, and he will not pitch one game for the Oakland Athletics. And where we held out hope, you know, could we see him in August? Could we see him in September? Oh, what that would mean, adding a guy like this. I'm still not going to be, as much as I love Liam Hendricks as a person, as a player, I still think what a gamble that was. The White Sox put out, what was it, 54 or 58 million?
54.
I mean, the largest number ever for a closer, for a guy who's never even been a closer for a full year. And I was happy that Liam got that money to take care of his family. It was the one big payday of his career. And he's having another very good year. But, yeah, the A's are not going to shell out the biggest contract in the history of baseball for a closer. And I thought the Rosenthal was a good deal. He threw the ball great last year from Kansas City to San Diego. And he is a legitimate closer. Man. Well, I told you, Pitcher Depot, that's where all these GMs are going. You got to go to Pitcher Depot, and what you're going to find, you're going to have a couple aisles of relievers. You're going to have a couple aisles of starters, but it's time to go shopping. This bullpen has been a dumpster fire lately. And when you got guys coming out throwing 88 to 93 miles an hour, that ain't going to cut it. But how many guys are really out there, and what are you going to have to give to get one of these legit relievers that are on the market right now? And I got to assume Billy Beane, David Force, they're pounding the phones. But right now, when you go to Pitcher Depot, there's nothing on sale. Aisle one, you know what aisle one is. Aisle one is guys who throw around 100 miles an hour. Aisle two, still throw pretty hard, and you got some saves in your career. Aisle three, that's desperation. But that's in the reliever section. Then you got the starter section. And, man, you're really not going to get any deals over there. Reliever and starters when you go to Pitching Depot. Check it out at pitchingdepot.com.
Well, that
you use the coupon code to get a deal. Well, I tell you right now, David Force, you better come up with something because, man, if the A's are going to make the playoffs, they're going to have to – I mean, how many arms do they need? They probably need multiple arms.
Yeah, and after that tweet we saw yesterday from Buster Olney talking about how he's mentioned how the Red Sox to a high-ranking executive would be a great landing spot for Kimbrel, and he said, no, it's going to be between the A's and the Astros. Man, if you could land Kimbrel now, because the Cubs, wait for it, they lost again yesterday. That's, 11 in a row that they've lost? So the Cubs, they're definitely falling out of it. If you can land Kimbrel and the ERA he has and the year he's having now to replace Rosenthal because he's going to be out for the year with the hip surgery to go on top of the thoracic outlet syndrome surgery, I would totally pull the trigger to try to get someone like him. MLB.com mentioned Daniel Bard again. He's got to throw it. His average velo on his fastball is around 98 and his sinker is around 97, almost 98. He's a great story. Throws hard. He has a very high ERA this year. It's over 4, but he has a lot, he's 12 saves. So maybe try to get both of them. Why not? I mean, you're throwing guys out that are that your bullpen hasn't been good in the last couple weeks. So why not try to get a couple guys to throw hard?
It's not a why not. It's a must. If you truly want to win. If you want to patchwork it, all right. But if you really want to win and you think you can compete in the postseason, you need guys like that. And how about for the Cubs? I mean, you need a third baseman, you need a shortstop, you need a first baseman. I mean, they have to be. I mean, they were my third inning hit yesterday. They have to be open for business right now. I mean, how often can you go get players like this, especially off one team? You know, we mentioned it yesterday. Is Josh Donaldson on the market? Nelson Cruz? So there's some bats out there. You know, the Cubs guys are going to be free agents, so they're rental. If you're going to go after someone like JD, you're going to have to take on salary. Nelson Cruz is always on a one-year deal. But you're going to have to do something. And for the A's, too, I mean, it's very obvious, whether you're talking about an outfielder, a DH. But there's a lot of people out there shopping right now. So it makes it tough. God, Trevor Rosenthal, $11 million, and will never throw a pitch for the Oakland A's in his career. Not, I mean, the odds of him coming back next year were slim anyway. But think about that. 1 year, 11 mil, and never throw a single pitch.
Now, remember, a lot of that money was deferred, too, if I'm not mistaken. But still, yeah, you're right. He will probably never throw a pitch for the A's.
Well, I mean, the only way he'd ever throw a pitch is
if he comes back next year.
He re-signs, which, yeah. You know, who knows what his career is going to look like. But that's so odd to have a – it's like a shoulder-slash-clavicle-type injury. It's nerve. And then to have hip surgery?
Yeah, they're saying it's
– That's what throws your season off?
They said it's a torn labrum. Is what in his hip, I guess, is what people. I saw Steve Berman from The Athletic and Shannon Rubin from the Mercury News are saying is what the injury was.
So, what did Bob Melvin just have his press conference?
Yeah, it was around 2:50. So we were still finishing our talk with Steve Sparks. So, right when he was talking.
Sometimes you're unlucky. Sometimes you make bad decisions, like Billy Butler, bad decision. This is one that you thought was a really good decision that you'd have your closer. I mean, remember when we talked to him when he signed, he was excited to be here, you know, coming to a team where he knows he's got a chance to win. And right before the season, to have that injury, and now this, that's pretty sad. Blummer, how are you?
I'm good, Tony. How you been, man?
We were actually talking about you the other day as a big trade acquisition of the Chicago White Sox. And we're talking about, hey, at the time, maybe people didn't think it was the biggest deal. But next thing you know, you're in a statue there on the south side of Chicago.
Yeah. I appreciate you bringing that up. And trust me, Kenny Williams was wondering about that trade until I took that swing, too.
Well, it worked out, didn't it?
Hey, that's all that matters. You know, if it wasn't for Bob Milano at University of California teaching me how to switch hit, I would have never hit that home run. So it always comes back to the roots in the Bay Area. But, yeah, it was meant to be, and I was very grateful for the fact that I was in Chicago at that time.
You know, rumors are out there right now, and, of course, the A's and Astros are both looking for bullpen help right now. I mean, how nice, whether it's the A's or the Astros, with the Cubs losing 10 in a row, picking up like a Craig Kimbrell, how big would that be for either of these organizations?
Yeah, it's kind of funny that you said that because I've actually had a couple of friends and people who watch the Astros games kind of saying, you know, who out there would be available to go out there and pick up? And, I mean, if you could pick up a guy like Craig Kimbrell and put him in back in a situation where his innings really start to count, and there's some intensity involved, I would imagine you'd probably get a guy that would go out there and be lights out for you. And having a guy who's had experience in the postseason, he's had experience at big markets, he's had experience in crucial situations and has the history that he has, and you put him on a winning team that is out there built to, you know, win a not just a division, but to hopefully win a pennant out there in the American League between these two teams, why wouldn't you go out there and just kick the tires and see if you could pull something like that off? Because he'd be a huge asset.
Yeah, the Cubs situation has just been, you know, weird for a while. They got some really good players, but they don't like their own players. They expected more championships. They only got the one. You know, people are going to be kicking the tires on Baez and Bryan and Rizzo. If you were around the Cubs, what would you do?
I would go ahead and try and make a sell for it and just to see what I could get back as far as prospects. because I think that's kind of the trend. You know, when Theo Epstein left, you kind of lost the identity of what the Cubs were going to be. And I think they're trying to figure that out right now. And I'm not sure, you know, if players kind of reacted to that saying, okay, maybe this isn't going to be the spot where we go out. We made our run. We got our ring in 2016. But past that, you know, are they going to be able to sustain a big winning window? And here we are, you know, 5 years removed from that. It seems like it's about time to go ahead and jettison some of these veterans and bring in some fresh young talent and give Dave Ross, you know, a whole new young roster or something to build around. But if those pieces are available, they've got some real opportunity to get some good prospects in return. Because like you just said, I mean, these are high value, very good ball players that might be available.
You know, when I think about the All-Star game, obviously it's an honor to go, but there's a lot that goes into it. How nice is it for players to be able to say, I'm taking the break, I'm going home, I'm sleeping in my own bed, I get to see my kids. All-Star game's great, but sleeping in your own bed is also great.
Yeah, I wish I had the luxury of being thoroughly annoyed by being an All-Star one time. Just one time is all I would have asked. But, you know, these guys that go and the demands that are being put on these players for a 162-game schedule, I do get it. And having talked to a lot of these guys, you know, your time is precious to you when you're playing such a demanding schedule like baseball has to offer. And then you put that All-Star game in the middle of the season where, you know, some of that time off is so valuable. A lot of these teams are going to be at 85, 86 games. And if you could get 4 days off your feet and just let the legs rest, let the arm rest, and come back rejuvenated, recharge for that stretch run when you're trying to go for a pennant, would probably mean a lot to these guys. And you guys know this as well as I do. You know, all these teams have analytics for a lot of numbers. They also have it for health. You know, there's some health data that's out there that says, you know, if you can take some time off your legs, it's only going to make you better down the stretch. And I'm sure a lot of teams and players are looking at that right now, but still, I would imagine it's a great honor for those guys to get the respect of being an All-Star. But if they could add a couple more days off of those guys, it'd be nice.
Yeah, with StatCast, I mean, you pretty much can chart anything. And you now know how much each player is running. I mean, you think if you play all your games at the Oakland Coliseum, you know, Matt yep. Chapman going from third to the dugout every inning is far different from like Ramon Laureano or Stephen Piscotty coming from center field and right field, and they can chart how much you cover, how much you're running. And that's kind of new, but I think it's kind of important too, to know, hey, which guys are, they've been running so much, these guys need a breather.
Yeah. The days of suck it up are long gone. You know, now it's, are you okay? Can you go another day? Because you're right. You know, I know for a fact when the Astros go through Oakland and you talk about guys like Michael Brantley, who's, you know, at 33, 34 is one of the older guys on the team. And he's got to run all the way out to left field three straight days. There's going to be a DH day on that fourth day. I can almost guarantee it. But you're right in the sense that they do track a lot of movement with those guys out there, and they're using it to their benefit. And they wouldn't be doing it if they didn't see the dividend of them getting those days off.
Well, you mentioned Michael Brantley. My God, this guy, it seems like he hits like 800 against the A's. He's hitting 340 this year. I can't even imagine what Cleveland was thinking letting this guy go. Just talk about, you know, as a hitter, what a treat he is to watch.
So when he was with the Cleveland Indians, you'd go through there or they would come through our ballpark and you'd go, oh my gosh, here's that Michael Brantley guy again. He would just real quietly get two hits a night and leave your ballpark, you know, hitting 500 in a series with about three or four RBIs. And you're going, man, wouldn't it be nice to have that guy on your team? And now we've had him for a good 3 years now. And even the threat of him signing somewhere else after playing here for 2 years, we were like, no. But he came back and he's been better this year. He's got one of the best left-handed swings I've ever seen. And if you could give me nine Michael Brantleys in this analytic age where everybody is shifting, my team would be the best team out there, because he has an unbelievable ability to use what you're doing against him against you. And that's what makes him just one of the best pure hitters I've ever seen. He's one of the most laid back. He's one of the most smart. He's a great guy in the clubhouse, and just all the way around, you couldn't have asked for a better guy or hitter to be in your lineup. But yeah, him watching him on a daily basis gives me a whole new respect for what he goes out and does every day.
When's Bregman going to get back?
I think everybody around here is hoping kind of after the All-Star break. I think rushing him back beforehand might be a little bit of a stretch because he's had issues with his hamstrings from spring training on. And then, the left quad, maybe a compensatory injury where he was trying to use that quad to cover up maybe the issues with the hamstring. And now you're just in the mode, I think, of just get to 100% because we're playing good baseball. The team has the American League lead or the American League West division lead. So if we can get through these next 6 days, give him another 4 days off during the All-Star break and make sure that he is 100% for that stretch run towards July, August, and September, I think they're going to err on that side of caution. So maybe after that All-Star break sometime, probably relatively quick.
Yeah, the reality is we're dealing with it with Mark Canha right now and his hips and his lower back. There's just certain injuries, and you can talk to this, that the only thing you can really do to get better is rest and not play.
Yeah, it goes back to that suck it up thing I was talking about. In the past, guys would try and find, try and out-milligram the injury and try and go out there and play a little bit more. But, this day and age where they're so intent on making sure guys are healthy, and I think players are a little more aware of their health too, because if you're going to go out there and earn a contract, you've got to make sure that you're playing at 100%. You can put up the numbers to get paid. And, it only helps the ball club too when you're healthy. But certain injuries, I just think that you cannot try and push, lower backs, big muscles, the hamstrings and the quads. Those are things you just can't try and play through because they have a tendency to linger. And the more they linger, the worse they get. And eventually they put you on the injured list at a bad time. And I think it's better for these guys to make sure they're 100% before they come back, especially when you're playing. Again, if you're playing for a team that's out of it, hey, take your time or push through it, whatever you want to do. But if you're on a team like the A's or the Astros, you better come back and make sure you're ready to be put in the middle part of that lineup.
Boston was just in town, so we got to see the Red Sox. And I've been saying this on the post-game show that when you look at Boston, you look at Tampa, you look at Toronto, I guess you can throw the Yankees in there, White Sox, Cleveland, Astros, A's, maybe, just maybe Seattle. There's a lot of teams that got a shot at this thing, but I don't see any of these teams being like the perfect complete team. I think it's really kind of, it's just who gets hot, everybody's got a puncher's chance. How do you see the American League?
No, I completely agree, and that's why you see teams going back and forth, beating each other up, and it creates opportunity for teams like Tampa Bay to still be in it because they have the depth of the organization, and you've got the Boston Red Sox who are playing much better with Alex Cora in there, putting him in the right spots, but it goes back to what you just talked about with some of these teams getting towards that trade deadline because I think everybody else recognizes the fact that, yes, we could fight this thing out, but do we have enough in our organization to go out there and create an opportunity to make that next step and get better than the Boston Red Sox? Find pitching that could neutralize a Rafael Devers or some of the guys in their lineups. Is Craig Kimbrel an answer in Oakland to offset some of the right-handed hitters here in Houston? I think that's where a lot of people, you might be right in that sense, where other teams are recognizing that and kind of seeing where and how they could go out there and make themselves just a step better to be able to put themselves a little bit deeper into that playoff situation.
We joke all the time that the Blue Jays could be the best team in New York. I mean, it's crazy.
I like that.
It's crazy to think that it's basically going to be 2 years that they never even play in their home ballpark. How crazy is that?
It's crazy, and it's also sad, too. I mean, I understand the circumstances of a pandemic and the security issues and the safety issues and making sure that everything is right. But, yes, the players are going to pay the price because they have not been able to play in their home ballpark and use the advantages of being in Rogers Center. But I always go back and think about the 30,000, 40,000, fans that want to show up and watch Bo Bichette, Kevin Biggio, Vladimir Guerrero. They're watching these guys perform at peak levels in an incredible year where numbers are going up for them and they're competing for that American League East title and they don't get to watch. That's probably the hardest thing for me to see in that ball club is knowing that they don't get to play at home in front of their fans and really get to be embraced by a great city like Toronto.
Yeah, and it's truly one of the great stops each year on the baseball calendar. Speaking of traveling, have they said anything to you guys when they think you guys might start traveling?
Next year. Yeah, we got to confirm that we are not going to travel this year. So a little bit of disappointment in that, but the hope for next year is that we'll be on the road, be able to get out there to the Bay Area and see some family and friends.
Well, you know, we watch your games all the time. You guys are doing a great job, and I just know how tough it is to cut. You know, I was with Ken Korak yesterday, and we were talking about just, you know, how tough it is to call baseball of all sports off a monitor. It's just not easy.
It's not easy at all. And when you're on the road, and you know this, having seen the global views, you fall victim of, you know, of what that home stadium is sending you. And I bet you could use your imagination and try and understand some of the visuals that we're seeing on our home on our home broadcast of visiting fans and some of their imaginative signs that they have put up for Houston Astro players that end up on our show is kind of tough. So that makes it a little bit tougher. And then, like you said, I mean, we miss a pitch here, we miss a play there, we don't have a replay. We don't have a good angle of a great play that one of our guys makes, and it makes it extremely tough. And, you know, I'm glad that fans don't notice the difference, but, you know, guys like you and I, we have a certain amount of pride in what we do, and we can recognize the differences in being able to call it off a monitor or in person.
Hey, you know, one thing, let's end on this. And one thing that we talk with Ray Fossey all the time, just the catchers and the pitchers with their cards and with guys on second base, it drives Fossey nuts. And it's like, we're now acting like every base runner is a code cracker and every base runner is the FBI. It's like, are we getting a little out of hand with protecting our signs?
Yeah, you know what? The paranoia is real and it's out there. And, you know, we all know that it started a long time ago and then was really enhanced in one particular year that I probably don't need to bring up. But yeah, there is a certain paranoia out there that everybody needs to have this, you know, NSA type sign decoding ring. And then, you know, we have the TSA coming out and checking pitchers after every inning. So yeah, we're in an interesting stage of baseball right now, to say the least.
Well, yeah, spin rates are down. We're seeing that all over baseball, but at some point,
yep.
The paranoia gets a little old. Blummer, you're one of our favorites.
It does.
Thank you so much for stopping by. Have a great All-Star break, and we'll talk to you in the second half.
No, I appreciate you, Tony. Always a good opportunity for me to be on with you guys out there in the Bay Area. I appreciate you, too.
The great Cal Bear. See you, Blummer.
Take care.
Wednesday is known as hump day for everyone during the work week. But on A's Cast Live, Wednesday means one thing. It's time for 30 uninterrupted minutes with the two-time World Series champion, two-time All-Star, two-time Rawlings Gold Glove winner, A's analyst on NBC California, and the face of the franchise, Ray Fossey.
Hi, Ray.
Hi, Tony. How you doing, buddy?
Well, we just had Steve Sparks on, and I thought he made a really good point about how things could be changing from a pitching standpoint to where if you can't do the sticky icky, maybe split fingers, circle change, maybe certain pitches will go back in vogue since those are pitches that you would not want sticky stuff for, maybe even a knuckleball.
Well, that would be good because I know that I think it was Kevin Gausman who said, I don't have to use that because I throw a splitter and a kind of a changeup. So, yeah, you don't want that. And definitely the knuckleball. I'd be interested to find out. Did you ask Steve if he had if they have the what do they call the revolution? The
spin rate.
Spin rate. Do they have spin rate on knuckleballs?
No, you do not. You do not want a spin rate whatsoever. And he talked about, like, he stayed away from rosin. He didn't even want rosin.
Yeah. Dry as possible. Well, I know that the baseballs were so hard that that he said it would be difficult to throw the knuckleball simply because he could not get the fingernails into the baseball. They were so hard. So, you know, it really would kind of take away. So they have to change the manufacturing of the baseball. But, you know, that's a good point about the sticky tacky stuff because, you know, first and foremost, I don't think the umpires are doing due diligence in checking. They're just kind of it's like a formality. Okay, they're supposed to do it. Let's do it. And, you know, if you're really going to do it, why check just certain areas? I don't know. Maybe that's why they're looking at certain areas like the belt buckle or inside the belt buckle, the cap, and I guess the glove. But, you know, if you want to put some stuff on your body, you can put it in a number of places and still be able to use it.
I think there's no question. It was, you know, the series the A's had with the Rangers, where I think it was the second game, and it was the YouTube game. And, you know, because they didn't go to commercial break at all. So they showed one of the pitchers. I can't remember if it was a Rangers pitcher or an A's pitcher, but it was the second day. You could tell the umpire barely looked at anything.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I mean, this was the second day, Ray. They're already over it.
No, yeah, I know that. And it's almost like, matter of fact, last night as J.B. Wendelken came in, he was heading into the dugout, and there was a shot of Seth Brown telling him and pointing back out that the umpire wanted to see him. You know, that, and essentially he walked right by and walked into the dugout. And typically, one of the umpires is running over to grab him at the foul line, and then somebody else comes over or whatever. So I think it's much to do about nothing, my friend. But, you know, that's what you're trying to do, and we'll see if it continues. But, you know, I think it's going to go away. I don't know what it's going to take, but the bottom, first of all, spin rates were never in vogue whenever I played, so I had no idea what the heck they were talking about, and I still don't. I still don't know how to calculate whenever they talk about a fastball, curveball, slider, and all those other pitches that they look at the spin rates. How in the heck can you talk about the number of revolutions in a matter of a split second, and then if it goes down, then, oh, by the way, we've got to figure out something because something's causing that reduced velocity or reduced spin rate, and now we have to start checking. And so I don't know. I think it's much to do about nothing, Tony. It's all I can say.
Well, whatever your spin rate is, the Astros don't seem to have a problem with it. Ray, they've been beating up on the A's, and they've basically been beating up on everybody else. I mean, since May 30th, they have outscored their opposition 217-122. I mean, they're hitting lights out.
Tony, there's not an out, an easy out in that lineup. And, you know, last night, it had been nice if the A's could have scored 10 runs. Maybe they would have won in the first inning, you know, because when they scored the three the A's did, I said, that's not going to be enough. And then Alvarez hits a two-run home run. The A's come back and score three more. I said, okay, you know, maybe something. And then they were shut down after that. But the Astros just keep coming back. There is nothing in their mentality that says that they are out of any game until the 27th out. And, you know, we were talking last night that, you know, there are tough 27-out parks. The Astros included in that one just because of the Crawford boxes and left. Short right field fence and right, the ball carries so well in those directions. If you hit the ball left center, right center. By the way, do you see where Tony Kemp was playing last night in left center? I can't remember who the hitter was, but there was probably 120 feet between Tony Kemp and the left field foul line. That's how much they were trying to getting the hitter hit the ball to left center, to right center. And, you know, it's just amazing with the park the way it is. But, you know, bottom line, Tony, they just are a good team. They're pitching. This Valdez kid last night probably had his worst outing of the year coming back the way it did. Kind of reminded me a little bit of Sean Manaea when Sean missed most of the season, came back in September, had a great September. But this kid came back much earlier than expected. And from a fractured index finger on his pitching hand, that usually, and they were talking about maybe the entire season, he comes back last night. So they've got a good team. That's all I can say. They have a good team, and you just have to figure out a way to beat them. And I don't know how you do it, to be honest, because I just don't believe. First of all, they don't give up, and what can you say? They're a good team.
Well, Sean Manaea, you know, you look what he's been doing, Ray. Last seven starts, he has a 1.24 ERA, and his average fastball is up a tick, almost at 93 miles per hour, and he's been carrying that throughout the entire start lately. You know, when you talk about Sean Manaea, what have you been seeing?
Well, what I saw was the start in Houston, where really at the beginning of the season, whenever the A's were at home against Houston, the Dodgers, and then all of a sudden they go to Houston, they lose the first game, and Frankie Montas and Manaea come out, I think it's Manaea first, and they started pounding fastballs. Alvarez couldn't hit a fastball from Sean Manaea on the outside part of the plate. And I was surprised because I thought he'd be hitting ball left field. But he started using his fastball and spotting his fastball. And if he does that consistently, which he has been doing, I'm not surprised his numbers are where they are. I don't know what happened. He just looked a little bit frustrated in his last start at the Coliseum after he was named the American League Pitcher of the Month. But other than that, he seems to be utilizing his fastball more. And again, if he does that, he's going to be successful, because we all know that you're going to use your other pitches off of you're going to pitch off your fastball. You're going to utilize your other pitches off your fastball. And if you do that, you're going to be successful.
You know, Ray, when you start talking about the trade market, I mean, it's pretty obvious what the A's are going to need. They're going to need bullpen help. They're going to need some uptick in velocity out of the bullpen. And yes, Merrill Petit, he is tied for the most appearances in 2021 at 42. He has struggled lately. Bob Melvin has used him a lot, and we're just in July.
Yeah. Well, he's been used as his go-to guy to get out of a jam. And, you know, it's a matter of guessing with him. It's almost like guessing fastball changeup, because he uses his deception more than anything. And whenever the deception is good, he fools a lot of hitters. Sometimes it's very surprising that he has the success he does fooling the guys the way he does. But, you know, when he comes into a ball game, it's, you know, you're hopeful that it's going to be a good one, that the deception is there. And that's what Scott Emerson always talks about, the, you know, disruption of timing. And that's what pitching is all about. But I think from Yusmeiro's standpoint, he's never ever going to be and never has been able to throw the ball 98 miles per hour, and you don't expect that to happen. Now, you add somebody that can on top of that, then maybe that's a different situation where he can be utilized more. But, you know, Tony, the A's have what they have, and, you know, as the trading line does approach, it's going to be interesting to see what the A's do, but they're going to have to do something, and it's usually the bullpen, because if starters aren't going to go deep, then it's going to be a telling tale of what's going to happen towards the back end of the game.
Well, as I like to say, Ray, I kind of made this up. You got to go to Pitching Depot if you're going to be shopping for pitchers, for relievers and starters, and there's going to be a lot of teams going shopping at Pitcher Depot.
I like that, Tony. You had a patent that, because
you know what? I want you to use that on NBC Sports California.
Man, that's a good one, because you know what? I think you're going to be exactly right. You think every team that has the possibility of playing in postseason, that's exactly what they're going to be looking for: starting pitching, bullpen help, whatever they can get to help them become a better team. That's a good one, Tony. That's a good one.
If you think about it, Ray, on aisle one, you got relievers who throw 100. Aisle two, you got veteran guys. Aisle three, you got guys who are a lot cheaper, but they don't throw 100. And then you got the whole starter wing of Pitcher Depot. I mean, this is a big store now.
Oh, man. But, you know, what's your availability? That's the whole thing, because the more teams you have that think they have a possibility of going into postseason, then the availability of those pitchers to put in those various roles you talked about become depleted, because they're not being put in those roles, and maybe they're being gobbled up even before they get into the store, you know, so. But I don't know. But, you know, I go back several years ago when Jim Messier That name's always going to stand out because he was acquired at the trading deadline. Everybody says, what are the A's doing? This guy, Joe Mussier, he was outstanding. He did a tremendous job. I think he had like a club foot or something. Guys would try to bunt on him and different things. But you know what? It was impossible. He was a tremendous pitcher. He did a great job helping the Athletics win. But you know, I think you really have to look at somebody who's durable, somebody who, you know, throw and can somebody who throws hard be durable? Are you concerned that maybe he's going to break down because he does throw hard? So I think it's going to be interesting to see what happens. But it's always a good time to start thinking about that. And I'm glad you brought it up instead of all the all-star stubs and all that kind of stuff that people want to talk about. That I just wish they would, you know, name the all-stars, not even play the game. Well, play the game because the money goes to good causes. But yeah, it's that good time of the year. I mean, heck, almost approaching 100 ball games that's been played. So you're almost down to that that end of the season that the A's and the teams had last year due to the pandemic. That you have the 60-game schedule and you're ready to go. But it's going to be an interesting time of the year, and I think the teams that feel that they can do something, the A's are right there. They're going to have to do some things to make themselves better. And let's just see what David and Billy have a chance and see what they want to do. What is this? July the 7th, July the 8th. So yeah, I mean, there's some time. It's happening pretty quickly. So I think we're going to be seeing some results of exactly what's going to be happening pretty soon.
Ray, you don't want to break down Home Run Derby?
Well, Home Run Derby. Yeah. That, you know, maybe they should just play the Home Run Derby and then forget about it, because that's where the attention's going to be. And I'm glad to see Matt Olson's in there. I don't think it's going to change his swing, because I know there have been some guys whose swings have changed due to participating in the Home Run Derby. I don't think Matt Olson, I'm happy he's going to be in there. I'm just very, very disappointed, Tony, that these players are not going to be able to participate in the All-Star Game or the Home Run Derby in their team uniforms. I still think it's a joke that if they go to just one uniform for American, one for a National, you know, for the Home Run Derby, okay, that's one thing. But whenever you're playing the game, you're representing a team, your team that says your name on your uniform. And that's the way it should be played. And I'm just disappointed that Major League Baseball has gone to that direction to, I mean, it's about money, you know, try to sell jerseys and trying to do some things that way. But I just think it's just disappointing that they're doing that.
Well, Shohei Ohtani's playing Home Run Derby every day, so I don't think it's going to change his swing as he hit his 32nd home run. We're not even at the All-Star break. He's got 32. He's going to have a legit shot at going after Roger Maris, because I think we all know how people feel about Bonds, McGuire, Sosa, hitting more than 61 home runs. In an era where guys are getting tested, if he can get over 61, that's going to be an interesting mark, and that'll be an interesting debate.
I think it's going to be as well. And I talk about Hank Aaron's being a legitimate, total in his career. I say that all the time, because I just don't believe that you could take what players were doing during that period of time to break records, eclipse records. And, you know, I think of Reggie Jackson, you know, what's 563, something like that. That's nothing. And Harmon Killebrew. But I agree with you that if Shohei Ohtani can do that, that's going to be pretty special. And I think it will be looked at as the record for the most home runs in a single season. And you know what would really be nice, Tony, to see him do it in 154 games. So there could be no asterisks about anything, because Babe Ruth did 60 in 154. It took Roger to do 61 in 162 games or something like that. So it would be nice to see Shohei Ohtani do it in 154 games, and then nobody can say anything.
Yeah, and the Angels have this dilemma of, hey, we want this guy to be a pitcher, but he's got to play every day. If they're going to have any type of shot, he's got to be in the lineup every single day. And at some point, you gotta weigh the value of what he is, a hitter versus a pitcher.
No, I agree. And I think it's got to be more of a hitter. Yes, he's a very talented young man to be able to pitch the way he does and can pitch. But unless you utilize him in the pitcher's role as a hitter, put him in there, I don't see how you can take his bat out of the lineup. I agree with you 100% on that, that his bat has got to be just as important. Now there's a team that might go after a starting pitcher, so they could say, okay, Ohtani, you know, you're going to be a hitter, and we're going to take advantage of your opportunity to swing the bat now versus maybe taking the chance of you hitting or pitching. Now, the amazing thing last year, Tony, when he had the Tommy John surgery, he still hit. You know, when a guy has Tommy John surgery, he's out for a year, year and a half. Yet here's a guy puts all that paraphernalia on his right elbow to keep it from doing whatever, and he's up there swinging the bat. I said, that's unfair. A guy has Tommy John surgery, he's supposed to be out. You can't do that. But that's how talented. I mean, he might be the most talented man we've seen in baseball, just to be able to do what he does, both pitching and swinging the bat.
He's truly amazing, Ray, and it's going to be a full display. I mean, you know what it's like to play in the All-Star game. How about to pitch and hit in an All-Star game? I mean, it's incredible.
Well, that's going to be very unique, and people will watch the game for that reason alone, just to see how Shohei Ohtani is going to be used by Kevin Cash. And, you know, the thing is, a manager doesn't have much to do as far as selection, but he has a lot to do about who plays when and trying to get as many players in as possible. Now that it's an exhibition game, you can get everybody in a lineup as long as you have somebody left, and you don't want it to have extra innings that you have to cancel the game like they did in 94. But I think that you, as a manager, it'd be interesting to see how Kevin Cash, I'm sure he's going to be talking to Joe Maddon quite a bit about how to utilize him. Maybe just have a token appearance as a pitcher and then let him DH. I mean, he was selected as a DH, right? And then selected as a pitcher. So essentially, he's got both. I mean, no player in the history of baseball has ever done that, where they've been able to participate in an All-Star game, having the ability to be a starting pitcher, plus be a home run hitter or at least a position player.
Will Kevin Cash actually be able to make decisions on his own during the All-Star game without his front office telling him what to do with every single move? Will he be able to do that at the All-Star game?
That might be the only game, because he's not having his own players play. that's a great point, Tony, because maybe Kevin Cash can finally manage a game and not have to worry about well, he's got so many players that are going to be playing anyway, that the concentration is trying to get as many, if not all, players in the game so you don't have somebody upset. I'll never forget in 92 or 93 when the game was in Baltimore, when Mike Mussina was warming up in the bullpen, Cito Gaston was the manager, and Mike Mussina planned for the Orioles, did not come in the game. And that place just started booing and booing and booing. And it was almost like at that point saying, we can never let that happen again. And, then it got to the point where the game became to determine the home field advantage in the World Series, which is really stupid because it's an exhibition game. And if you get to the point where you want to play everybody or have to play everybody, how could it be something to determine home field advantage? Earl Weaver, when he managed the 70 All-Star game when I played, he came in and he said, we're going to win this game. I don't care what we have to do. If you can't play well enough to participate and I can't use you, I don't want you to be upset. If you're going to be upset, leave right now, because I want to win this game. And it meant nothing other than the pride of beating the National League. But that's how much it's changed to where you want everybody to play, which is all the more reason, if Major League Baseball wants that, then why not let the players wear their uniforms of the team that they play on, so that when they're lined up and they're introduced, then that team can be represented and you could cheer that team based on your player who's playing.
Well, I still think for the game, they're going to wear their own uniform.
Pardon?
Yeah, I think they're going to wear their own uniform for the game.
I don't think so, Tony, because they've used American and National for the home run derby
practice. But yeah, but they still wear their either road jersey or home jersey based on. They still wear their own.
Is that because I read that they were not going to do that?
Well,
I read that
that would be a change. Then your change. That would be a total change because, I mean, it's always been that way. But if they're changing.
I know it's always been that way, but I have read that they were going to have specific uniforms for the All-Star game.
Really? That's awful.
Yes.
That is awful.
Well, I agree. I mean, let's hope that's not the case. But
Cody is confirming it, but that really doesn't mean much. He's not really that great of a source.
Did Cody confirm that? Then Cody's right on.
Confirm.
Because I did read that. Matter of fact, we talked about it on the air, and everybody was said it was absurd to think that you're going to play an All-Star game and not have your team's uniform represent. Thank you, Cody.
Of course, Ray. What I have is this year, however, things look a little different. MLB is standardizing uniform colors across both leagues, with the National League in bright whites and their American League counterparts in navy blue.
Oh,
yeah. So you will not have Matt Olson lining up on the foul line to be introduced in an Oakland A's uniform, right?
That's a travesty.
Well, you know what? I can't say we're breaking it here because it's been talked about, but that's why I keep bringing it up because, you know, sure, do it in America for the home run derby, you know, and the practice and all that kind of stuff. You know, you have your jerseys, but no. When I read that, I couldn't believe it. So
it just gives me another reason while I'm on vacation to not watch any baseball and take a break. But by the way, Ray, today's my 88th straight game.
Yeah. Well,
88 straight.
You're a gamer, buddy. You're a gamer.
I cannot wait for this All-Star break, especially after that game last night.
Yeah, right. I'm right there with you.
All right, buddy. Yeah. Have a great call. I will be watching on NBC Sports California.
California. You got it, buddy. Take care. Take care, Cody. I'm glad you confirmed that because Tony trying to make me sound like I didn't know what I was talking about.
Well, I would never do that.
Remember,
I would never do that.
I'm not a reliable source, so don't
take
anything I say.
Reliable. This isn't. He's not the AP, let me tell you.
Yeah, you are reliable, Cody. That's for sure.
Thanks, Ray.
Take
appreciate
care, guys.
It.
See you, Ray. Steve, how are you? It's good to hear your voice.
I'm doing great, Chris. How are you guys doing?
Well, after last night, not so hot. You know, this Astros lineup, I mean, you start looking at, you know, like the first six batters for the Astros, it is no day at the beach. What have you been seeing with this lineup?
Well, what I'm starting to see is there's some other guys, too, with Miles Straw. I mean, I don't know if you've kind of paid attention, but like we have, but it's guys like Miles Straw that's seeing about seven or eight pitches per at bat, it seems. They're starting to wear out some pitchers when that lineup turns over again, since he's done such a nice job here lately. It's made it even better. So, yeah, 1 through 6, obviously, and it's been that way for a little while. They're pretty stout, even with Bregman out.
Yeah, and that's kind of the amazing thing going on right now is you look at what the Astros did to the A's last night, and Bregman's not even in the lineup, and he's one of your best players.
He is. You know what? But they are deep, and what they do probably a little differently and a little better than a lot of teams is that they grind out at bats as well as anybody that I've seen as far as plate discipline, pitch recognition, all of those things. And we've talked about it before, but very few strikeouts, still have the slug, all that stuff. And when you put it together, man, it's one of the best offenses we've seen.
You know, it's funny. I always say I'm old man River talking about batting average, but I think there is a correlation. The fact that the Astros hit .274, no one else is close to them, and then that has led to the amount of runs. I mean, the Astros right now have 483 runs. The next closest team is 428. That's a big difference right there.
It is, and that's the name of the game, right? I mean, it's all about scoring runs and how you do it. And I think what gets missed sometimes is how you do it. And when you do it by not only hitting home runs, but you're also able to go the other way. Situational hitting is really good. They lead the major leagues in sacrifice flies, things of that nature. I think that goes a long way. I think a lot of people miss when teams rely so much on the long ball and, say, score an inordinate amount of runs via the home run. Then I think a lot of times those teams get beat by really good pitching. And that's the name of the game, is you can beat the mediocre pitchers like me, but can you beat the Garrett Coles of the world?
Well, I got to tell you, you know, looking at the A's offense, that's exactly what you're talking about. You know, we're a three true outcome team. It's home run, it's walk, it's strikeout. And if we hit home runs or normally solos, talk about what it's like to pitch against a team like that.
Well, you know what? I think we saw that last year with Oakland when you got Tommy La Stella and you had Grossman in there and you started to put together those extended, tough at-bats that were contagious. I think that's missing probably in their lineup right now. There's too many guys that are a little streaky. But when you get a La Stella and you get a Grossman, guys that are going to go out there and grind and have a good on-base percentage, see a lot of pitches, I think that's contagious, number one. And number two, I think it balances out your lineup. You know, the Astros felt like they were too much on the other extreme a few years ago, and that's when they went after the Josh Reddicks and the Brian McCanns, guys like that who put the ball in play a little bit more, because the swing and miss was just too tough on them.
Well, and I think about where we are in July, and we're seeing this all over baseball. You're seeing so many guys who are hitting 230 or left, 230 mm-hmm. or less. Is that shocking to you this far into the season that just about so many lineups you see that?
It is. I think it's going to change, and I think we're going through a bit of a cycle right now, and I think with the crackdown, with the sticky stuff, we might see guys putting the ball in play a little bit more, cutting down with two strikes, because it's just not a wiffle ball coming up there anymore. Man, it was really getting ridiculous, I thought. So, the game will change a little bit. We'll see if they change some of the things with shifting. I think that's where a lot of this started. But the inability to put the ball in play with two strikes has kind of gone away, and I think that's what's made the Astros stand out a little bit. In essence, they're able to put the ball in play even when the count's not in their favor. And sometimes you get lucky that way.
You know, somebody you know real well, Mark Langston, was on the program. He said, you know, the problem with today's hitter is that everybody just has the same swing. It's one swing. And there's not mm-hmm. a whole lot of adjustments going on. And that made me think of Michael Brantley last night, how he's able to bring his hands in. He can pull the ball. He can take the ball the other way. However you pitch him, he will adjust. He's got multiple ways to beat you. We don't have a lot of guys like that anymore. Why do you think?
Well, he's very, very special. I mean, he's special in any era, but he really stands out now because he does. He hits the ball where it's pitched. And I think that's been lost. And I think we're going to start seeing, Chris, guys get drafted that are more like Michael Brantley, guys that put the ball in play and can go the other way. Because of all the shifts right now, if you're a left-handed hitter and you hit the ball into the shift, Kyle Tucker's gone through this when he's not able to elevate the baseball. It's an out. I mean, it doesn't matter if you hit the ball 110 miles per hour. It's an out. So to be able to hit the ball where it's pitched, to be able to manipulate the bat and the bat angle, things of that nature, I think those skills are going to be sought after, and those are the types of players you'll draft.
As a knuckleballer, would you have liked the shift behind you?
Yeah, I would have, and I love the aggressive shift. So you saw it with the A's last night with Miles Straw. Piscotty was about five steps from the right field line. I love how aggressive they get with their outfielders. The Astros do that to an extent too, but as a knuckleball pitcher, a lot of times those emergency swings and those hits the other way to the opposite field, I got burned on those quite a bit. So I would always try to give guys a heads up, but then you have somebody else in the dugout moving guys around. So the way they have the algorithms now to put people in place where the ball's most likely to be hit, I wish that was around, certainly back when I was playing.
And when I think about spider tack or whatever glue people have been using, the sticky stuff to help spin rate, right, the last thing you want as a knuckleballer, right? You don't want spin rate. You don't want any spin. So would the sticky stuff have helped you, or would you have not even used it?
No, I had to totally stay away from anything sticky. I had to stay away from raws and everything else. It had to be slick. I think the same thing, Chris, it could be said for the split finger fastball. You don't want any tackiness on your fingers for the split finger fastball. So if you're starting to compile some of this data with pitchers and see a decline in effectiveness because their spin isn't as good on their curveball or slider, then maybe we'll start seeing pitchers who rely more on changeups and split finger fastballs to get some break or some secondary action off of their fastball become more in vogue.
Yeah, you know, the way it was explained to me is the fact that just like on the fastball, you take like a four-seam fastball and it kind of helps defy gravity and it helps it stay on the same plane longer because it's spinning so much and you're throwing it so hard. You know, it is truly amazing that not only does this stuff really affect your breaking balls, slider, curveball, whatever, but what it also does for your fastball. It's the fact whoever figured this out, you're like, wow, that's pretty good stuff.
It is great stuff. And you know, the slow speed cameras and all that thing, that stuff, and what they figured out as far as the backspin on the baseball and all it does, Chris, is it just creates deception more than anything else. The ball doesn't rise. It just holds its line more so than a normal pitch. And everybody's so programmed and they've got a database to what a ball typically does, and when it doesn't do what it typically does, that's when you get the swing and miss, and that's when you have an effective pitcher. Because, you know, we were in the minor leagues and we were charting behind home plate the day before and the day after we were starting pitchers, and we were charting guys that were throwing 86 miles per hour right at the belt, right by guys, and had no idea that, you know, some of these guys just had a better spin rate than others, and that was the reason for their effectiveness. Had no idea. Thought they were lucky, to be honest with you, or thought that they were hiding the ball a little bit better, but the deception came from that spin rate, and it was deceptive to the hitter's eyes.
Isn't that crazy when you think about when you played to where we are today, where, as you said, guys could be great pitchers throwing 88 miles an hour, and now, I mean, everybody's coming out of the bullpen throwing 98 to 100 or even more than 100.
Right. Yeah. You know, I don't know if that's a good or a bad thing. I think guys get rushed to the major leagues that throw in the mid to upper 90s often because it's been proven that swing and miss is where it's at. But a lot of times guys, you know, and the Astros are really fighting this right now outside of Ryan Pressly. They've had a hard time finding guys, not just to set him up, but just to throw strikes. And I think a lot of it stems from guys just overthrowing. You know, and you just don't see guys anymore. And Petit is kind of an outlier with the A's who pitch, you know, guys who change speeds and especially change speeds with their fastball. And you start seeing guys that change speeds on their fastball and it's a different ball game, man. It changes the whole game. You start having lower pitch counts. You start getting deeper into the ball games. Heck, you'll even complete a few games if you get some quicker outs by not trying to overthrow all the time.
A complete game? What is that?
yeah, it's amazing.
You know, here at the deadline, it seems that there's going to be a lot of GMs lining up at the reliever store, right? There's going to be, that's going to be, and I know the Astros, the A's, you know, kind of fishing in the same pond. But other than relief pitching, what else could Houston use?
They need a depth piece, probably an infielder. You know, I guess, you know, Ledmys Diaz should come off the IL in the next 3 weeks or so. Bregman should come off the IL in early August. So you get a little bit back there, but they don't have much depth, this team. Chaz McCormick's a good fourth outfielder, but they could use another probably outfielder as well. But as soon as somebody in the starting lineups, one of their regulars goes down, it's a pretty big drop off, and they don't have a lot of depth at the upper levels of the minor leagues right now. So I think outside of a relief pitcher, as you mentioned, I think you need somebody who could fill in maybe as an infielder or an outfielder. And I just don't know if it's worth it right now.
Well, let's end on this. Knowing that you're going to get back on the road with the team, not going to be calling games off monitors anymore, what's that going to mean for you when we talk about normalcy to get back on the road with the team?
Well, it's being able to tell stories and talking with players and you know, and that's what it's kind of, that's what the listener kind of relies on, just a little bit different from what they're able to watch, you know. So we get to tell some stories and get to know these players a little better. There's a couple of guys, or there's a few players that I've never met that have been on this team for a year and a half now. So that's going to be interesting. You know, we've talked to them on Zoom a little bit, but it's a whole new ball game when you get a chance to actually talk a little pitching with maybe somebody and find out a story or two to be able to relay to fans. And I think we're all storytellers. And for me, doing three innings of play-by-play along with the color stuff, being able to lean into a home run call even is going to feel good again on the road. So we were always trepidatious about, you know, really kind of elevating a little bit on a home run call because you just really couldn't tell when you weren't there in person.
Well, it's always great to have you on, and we can't wait to see you back in Oakland.
I got an impression for you. You got 2 seconds.
I got all the time you need.
All right, this is an impression. I want to see if you can guess who this is. All right, Vinny, before we get back, I got a little update for you. We got guys in Midland, and in particular, it's Tim Donahue, utility infielder. And you're not going to believe this, but it's the last 6 games for Donahue that stick out. How about this? He's got a homer. He's got a double. He's hitting .286 and 2 sacrifice flies, 3 RBIs. And is Kenny sitting down? Make sure Korak doesn't hear this. And make sure Fossey doesn't hear it. But listen to this. Donahue now tied for 4th in sacrifice hits in the entire Texas League. What are they waiting on?
Bob Hartz.
Who?
Bob Hartz.
Chris Townsend.
Yeah, okay, I got you.
That's my minor league update.
Yes, I have to do that every day. That is very, now that I think about it, yeah, I'm thinking, God, who's he talking about? Oh, that is fabulous. You know what? That might be the best thing we've had all season long, and we've been, what, 88 games? Nothing better than that.
There you go.
All right, buddy, you take care. Be well.
You too. Take care, man. It's always good talking to you.
Matt, thank you so much for the time. I know it's early there in Houston. How are you? It's been a while.
Yeah, doing well. Thanks for having me. And yeah, everything's good.
You know, once you get named to the All-Star team, it's something that you have for the rest of your career. It will be on your Wikipedia page. It'll be on your baseball reference page. What does it mean to you? I know you haven't played in the game yet, but what does it mean to you to be able to know that you'll always be a Major League Baseball All-Star?
Yeah, you know, I think it's definitely an honor to be named as one, and, you know, to be able to be in the same sentence as some of these guys who've been in All-Star games forever. And yeah, you know, it'll be a cool experience, I'm sure, and go have the fun in Colorado and come back, try to win a World Series.
What was it like for your family?
You know, they were obviously really excited. I think, you know, some people are still a little in disbelief of it, I guess. You know, my dad just said that he thinks of All-Stars as not his son. So he's having a hard time putting two and two together. But, you know, obviously they're really happy for me, and you know, a lot of them are going to be coming out and to kind of share some of the stuff during the All-Star weekend, and it'll be fun.
You know, because it isn't all about you. You know, it's about the people that help you get on this journey. And when you think about your parents and you think about your family and you think about everybody that they did all the car rides. They did everything they could to help you get to this point. I mean, it really is a celebration. What do you think it's going to be like for everyone once they get to Colorado?
You know, I'm not sure. I think there'll be a lot going on, a lot of things to do. Hopefully I can get some time to spend with them, like you said. You know, it is, you know, everything that happens on the field is a culmination of the way I was brought up and you know, my parents making sacrifices to get me to games and doing all the little things. And, you know, I'm very grateful for what my family has done to, you know, allow me to be in this spot. So, yeah, it'll be good to kind of come full circle a little bit and celebrate, you know, a cool moment in my life with them as a way of thanks.
You know, this might be a better question after the game, once you've played in it and you've been around it, but I know you've thought about this your entire life. Where are you with that as someone growing up going, God, playing in the All-Star game would be amazing. You now are going to be doing that.
Yeah. Yeah. It should be cool. I'm sure there'll be some butterflies whenever I get in the game. And, you know, like you said, it's one of those things that, you know, as a kid, you think about doing, you know, for doesn't happen for everybody. So, like I said, I'm honored. You know, I just am excited.
And then how about Home Run Derby? You are in it. You've been slotted. You're already going to go up against Trey Mancini to start this thing out. What are your thoughts about Home Run Derby?
Yeah, that was another thing. As a kid, you want to do it. So when the opportunity was presented to me, it's one of those things that, you know, I think I'd regret it if I ended up not doing it. So we'll give it a shot. Historically haven't been the best Home Run Derby guy, but who knows, maybe I'll get hot and, you know, I know it'll be fun at the least. So yeah, we'll just have to see what happens there.
And if you're gonna do Home Run Derby, Coors Field, are you kidding me? I mean, if there was one place to be able to do this, what do you think about doing it at Coors Field up in the elevation and the altitude?
Yeah, it is. It will be a really cool spot, along with the names that are doing it, whether it's, you know, Alonso or Gallo or Otani or Soto, a lot of guys who got some real, pop. So I'm predicting to see some pretty cool baseballs, hit during that derby.
When you've taken BP here before, what's it like taking BP at Coors Field?
Yeah, it's pretty good. You know, the ball does jump a little bit. We'll see. You know, I think they do the humidor balls for us normally. I don't know what the case is with the derby, but yeah, you know, sometimes if you you get a ball up in the air that you don't really think is gonna have the juice. Sometimes in Colorado, it keeps carrying with that altitude. So hopefully there's a lot of that going on Monday night or whatever night the derby is.
Yeah, I think we're going to have the balls outside of the humidor for this thing. So it's going to be grip it and rip it. What is the key to hitting home runs, hitting a lot of them? Is there a rhythm that you get into? Is there a thought process? What is like when you just have a BP session and you just start ripping them out of the ballpark?
Yeah, you know, I don't – honestly, my BPs, I try to kind of stay more line drive personally. So, you know, I don't really have too many BPs where I'm just, you know, rattling, you know, 15, 20 straight homers. So – this is going to be a little, it'll be a little adjustment for me, but, you know, I already got a little advice from Chad to you know, not worry about trying to lift it too much and just take your normal BP and you know, square them up with a little bit of loft, but not to go too far with it.
You know, the one thing about your season so far this year, and it's something that we talked to you at the beginning of the year about how last year you may have got too wrapped up in video and you had too many thoughts in your head, more see ball, hit ball this year. And also the one thing we've noticed, you going the other way more than ever. What has that thought process been like for you and beating the shift on a consistent basis?
Yeah, it's been something that's happened a little more this year. I think it's been a combo of I think my swing has just been in a better spot overall, and you know, when I've been a little late on pitches, I've done the right thing and gone the other way with it, as opposed to being late and swinging through it or fouling it off. So you know, that plus just the confidence of hitting a few balls that way, and then, you know, knowing, trusting that you can be a little late and doing it. You know, it's been nice to be able to, you know, get back to the all field hitter that I feel like I can be, and you know, I want to continue that.
Have you noticed since you've been doing this, have they changed how they shift you to certain teams?
I've gotten a couple times where they moved back over normal and you know, got a hit or two up the middle because of it. So it was nice to watch a ground ball go over second base and into the outfield for once.
You know, that is something that I wonder if they ever banned the shift. You know, everybody grows up being told, hit the ball back up the middle. Well, now there's a guy there. It's like it's completely changed from what you're taught from a very early age.
Yeah, it is really weird. I mean, that's been what everybody's pretty much told us our whole life growing up. And then starting a couple of years ago, that's automatically taken away. So, yeah, you know, there are spots they aren't playing, but they're obviously not playing there because it's harder to hit it there. So, and these guys pitch to the shift. They're aware of where guys are playing. So yeah, it's just another little challenge that we got to deal with.
You know, I can tell you, like, when we're doing this show and doing the post game show and a couple losses to the Astros, the fan base is gripping, obviously. But what is it like for you guys? Because you're very cool, calm, and collective. What's it like for you guys when you go through a little bit of rut, how there isn't that, you know, finger on the panic button inside the clubhouse?
Yeah. You know, obviously a couple tough losses here the last couple of days. But, you know, I think everybody's just looking at the big picture. You know, we're about to be at the break, and we typically do a lot of our, you know, play a lot of our best baseball after the break. It's just how we've been the past couple of years. And so, you know, I don't think anybody's panicking at all. A lot of time left before the end of the season, and playoffs and division champ stuff starts coming around. So, you know, we're just going to take it day by day, try to win this game today, and, you know, continue off through the rest of the season. Hopefully we get hot in the second half.
How impressed have you been by your starters? Because your starters are leading baseball in innings pitched.
They've been great. Bass and Manaya are kind of, you know, leading the guys. And, you know, obviously all of them have great stuff, and, you know, we want them having the ball, but this year it's felt like just a different mentality from the guys. You know, they want to go as deep as they can. They want the ball at the start of the game. It's been awesome to watch, and it's been, you know, it's put us in a lot of good positions to win games.
Well, you know, one of the biggest transitions for you has been the new puppy that you have at home. How have you been able to handle the new puppy? Because, you know, new puppies, it's a whole different ball game in the house.
Yeah, well, actually, the pup's still back in Georgia with my fiance, so I'm more dealing with not being able to see the puppy. You know, I'm getting all the cool pictures and videos, and I don't get to hang out with him.
You know, I got talked into the new puppy, and the kids were going to pick up after the dog. They were going to do everything. They were going to walk the dog because I have twin girls that are 15. By the way, who do you think's walking the dog and picking
that's
up?
That's all you.
Dog? Yeah.
Yeah, that's all you.
I got sold a bag of goods. So you don't even have kids yet, and you got sold the bag of goods.
Yeah, but, you know, It'll be worth it when I get back in the off season, and you know I got somebody to hang out with when I'm done with my day at 1 o'clock in the afternoon.
Well, you know, the great thing about being named to the All-Star game, it's something that stays with you for the rest of your life. You know what? Like I said earlier, whether you go onto your Wikipedia page or you go to Baseball Reference, it'll always put that AS there. It'll be an All-Star, and I know that's something that everybody thinks about being in this game one time, and I think you're going to be in it a long time. I've said this before on the show. If I have to bet of any A that I think could be an MVP anytime soon, it's going to be you. I just think, you know, going with the family and your parents and the fiance, this is going to be one of the great moments of your sporting career.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. Very kind words, and yeah. Should be fun, and hopefully more to come.
Well, hopefully next time we're back on the field. We got to be actually Ace Cast Live back on the field. So hopefully we will see you soon, but good luck in the All-Star game. Enjoy every minute of it. It's one of the great honors that you'll ever have in your career, and we'll see you back in Oakland.
Sounds good. Thank you.
This has been a presentation of the Oakland Athletics.